Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. Joining us as always, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm at AH Malcolm on Twitter. And of course, RedState.com is where he writes. Andrew, welcome back and a belated happy Independence Day to you.
Thank you. Same to you. And happy Canada Day 4 days before that.
Yeah, happy Canada Day, right? Yeah, for our Canadian, and we do have a few Canadian viewers and readers, so happy Canada Day. You know, stay chilly, I guess. What do they do to celebrate Canada Day in Canada?
Well, actually, the one that's funnest is Victoria Day, which is she was queen when they when Britain forced independence on Canada. seriously, that's the truth. But Victoria Day is in May. It's like around the same time as Memorial Day. And that's the big fireworks deal and so on. But in July, of course, the Canadian football is going. The regular season, which is a lot of fun. So... yeah, it's nice. All right. I'll tell it, Ed. by popular demand. What had happened in the early 1860s? We had a civil war, and the United States had the largest military in the world, and 2 years later, William Seward engineered the purchase of Alaska from Russia, where the Tsar needed money really badly. And so he bought Alaska. So here's Britain with Canada, which is 10% larger than the U.S. But the U.S. just leapfrogged and bought Alaska on the north of Canada and already had the south of Canada. So Britain said, we need to make it a country before they take us over, before they take over Canada. So it made Canada into a country in 1867, I think. And Canada, there was no revolution. It was just like, oh, okay. Are you sure about that?
Well, Canadians are nice, you know.
Oh, they're wonderful people, and they are
nice people.
Good toffee, yeah. Good people. Yep. All my family. I was the first Yank in the bunch, so everybody I knew in my childhood was a Canadian, and the only thing that stuck out. Well, they talk funny, so I had to adjust the way I talked. We spent most of the summer in Canada, and so I had to learn about the A thing, you know, going to the store, A. And the money had a girl on it, and the denominations were different colors, and the mailbox had crowns on it, and all my relatives were frequently talking about the dollar. You know, Canada's money is called the dollar too, and I said, right, they wouldn't compare themselves so much to the United States if they had a currency that was a different name. But they didn't, and excuse me, and the value varies. So they were always going, "Oh, our dollar is worth more than yours," and I thought, well. Okay, as long as I can buy Macintosh's toffee, I don't care what the value is. But anyway, so yeah, it was good. And then I ended up being the New York Times correspondent there for a number of years, and then wrote a book about Canada, a couple of books about Canada. And so that turned out really good, one foot in each country. I haven't been back in a while, but... it's a nice place, and the ice cream is good.
Well, and that matters. The ice cream is good.
And they have funny people, you know, John Candy.
Oh, yeah, they got great comedians. Yeah. A lot of good comedians and actors from up there, too. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, who played Abraham Lincoln in the original movie? Walter Pidgeon was a Canadian, so they had to get a Canadian to play the great American president. And back in the 30s, the early days of film, America's Sweetheart was Mary Pickford, and she was Canadian. So, yeah, there's a lot of connections, and I had that in my book. The things that are Canadian, like penicillin and pabulum and so many things that were Canadian that you don't think of as being uniquely Canadian, but that's okay with them. They're very polite.
They're very polite people. I mixed it up with Canada a little bit during the Gomery hearing, but when I went up there, they were lovely people. They're just lovely people. They were very nice. Even the media was nice, right? Because I basically scooped them all. They weren't allowed to report on what was being said in the hearing. And I was getting it from a firsthand source and basically publishing everything that was being said. And I heard from more than one Canadian journalist that said, we're kind of bitter because you're doing it, but not because, not at you, but because... Yeah. The situation where we weren't allowed to report on this. And so they said, don't mistake our bitterness to be hostility towards you. And it's like, I didn't even know you guys were bitter.
Well, you know, and
really friendly.
They very friendly. They have a different, not surprisingly, it's a different country, but they have a different legal system, which is more British than, because remember, as I said, they didn't have a revolution. So they weren't fighting against Britain to become a country. And so, for instance, the legal situation in Canada, if I say something and it hurts your business, you can sue me, even if it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, same way, yeah.
Yeah. And I just, that doesn't sit well with me, but then again, I lost my Canadian citizenship in a legislative maneuver some years ago. So, the hell?
The heck with them.
But now, the heck with them.
The heck with them, eh?
Yeah, eh? Yeah, yeah. But that's not very interesting. We need to move on.
So let's move on. Couple things today. I mean, you got a great column up. We're going to talk about that. You've got a great new memory column up. We're going to talk about that too. But I got to tell you, the most fun story that I dealt with today was the Politico memo of the year from last year, 2024. The way I framed this is as, and the 2024 award for the worst political memo goes to, and it's senior advisors of the Biden administration, or the Biden campaign, I should say, not the administration. Although apparently Ron Klain and Cedric Richmond were part of this. This is I propose that we call it the Wrong Way Regals Award for own goal of the year. This was the campaign memo dated April 15th, which was coincidentally also the date that the Titanic sunk. I didn't mention that in the post. The memo that urged Joe Biden to get into a early debate with Donald Trump. And I guess they were serious, you know?
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to read this Politico playbook?
It's an amazing story. It sheds new light on. I mean, it was the decision to challenge Trump. It just shows that he has lived in their inhabited their mind since he came down the escalator. They were so off their nut. It's just inconceivable. it shows how they had fooled themselves about Biden. I mean, your story, I think, said there were some who said, oh, wait a minute, do we really want to do it, debate Trump so early? And, you know, Biden was thinking, oh, well, put him away. But those people that were making that memo, they saw Biden. They couldn't think that he would knock it out of the park. It's so delusional. And then you think, well, they were running the country. God almighty, did we dodge? Oh, well, didn't dodge a bullet. We dodged a whole bunch of them.
Well, and this is one of the things that I think is important to note about this, is that, first off, Ron Klain was part of this group. I just want to emphasize this. This is the guy who was chief of staff for the first 2 years of Biden's presidency. Cedric Richmond was his the guy who ran the office of publicity management or something like that. He was basically, you know, but senior advisor. He's also a senior advisor who had also left by that point in time, but he left to go to the campaign. And these guys should have known better. And in fact, Ron Klain later discovered just how bad off Joe Biden was. And it's not in this.
How can you discover it? You see him every day. That's so delusional. It's like I'm going to believe what I want to believe, even though it's raining. It's a nice day. Let's have a picnic.
So, I mean, but this is, I have to emphasize this because we're still getting reporting that, oh, he wasn't that bad off, right? Oh, you know, he was still, right? Yeah. So in this post, Free Beacon had this story a couple of months ago, actually 3 months ago. And it was a different book and a different anecdote. And Ron Klain comes back because he never actually was officially part of the campaign, but he came back to help Biden prep for the debate. And this is June of 2024, right? This after helped write the memo, you know, or at least fed into the memo to
right. And they were at Camp David, yeah,
right. And it says Klain had never seen Biden so exhausted and out of it. This again, a separate book. Biden was unaware of what was happening in his own campaign. Halfway through the session, the president excused himself and went off to sit by the pool. He had to cut short the two mock debates. One, Biden stopped after 45 minutes because Biden was shot, right? The second one, he didn't even get 30 minutes into it before Biden said, I'm just too tired to continue, and went to bed. Now, first off, that should give you an idea of where Biden was in the compos mentis. These guys never piped up and said a word. And this is not just about being president for four more years. This is about a guy who can't even do a 30-minute debate prep without having to take a nap, and he's president of the United States and leader of the free world. This is not a guy who was capable of even doing the job that he had at the time, let alone four more years of it. And Ron Klain, Cedric Richmond, and everybody involved in this damn well knew it.
Oh, yeah. It's delusional. And what it says to me is, the elder abuse is what it is. They wanted
that too. Yeah,
they wanted him to stay in so they could stay in, the hell with the country. Nobody cares about that. They wanted those salaries, the influence, the power, and this goes to Jill Biden too. I mean, how could you? She's not as old as she's what, 7 years younger, 9 years younger than he is. But she's the one that had to go fetch him when he'd wander off at events. She knew darn well that he couldn't be president, and they thought they could cover it, you know, with the auto pen and limited the exposure, public thing. Don't let the cabinet see him, and the media would go along with it. And the media did go along with it, but after that debate last year, they couldn't. And then the corruption of or the what's the word, the corrupted minds of Democrats, then Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer engineering putting Kamala Harris in, maybe they thought there was a slight chance she would win and would save their bacon. But there was no democracy involved in this. This was an engineering, this was a coup, a party coup. Nobody voted ever for Kamala Harris to be a nominee.
Yeah.
2024.
So, I mean, the other thing it does raise, and, you know, some of our commenters said this, is that this makes them even more convinced that the senior advisors did this deliberately to expose Biden so that they could get him out of the way and push Kamala Harris. I mean, that's sort of 3D chess on steroids type of thinking. I mean, I suppose it's possible, but no, I think these guys were just drinking the Kool-Aid. And this is the reason why I always refer to it now as the Biden Regency rather than the Biden presidency, because Biden wasn't president. Ron Klain, Cedric Richmond, these guys were president. You know, Jill Biden was president. Hunter Biden was probably president.
And Steve Ricchetti. And, and Jill Biden. It's scary. And it makes me angry every time I think about it. But you think that our adversaries, what an amazing time to take advantage of a weakened U.S. I mean, they could have pulled off all kinds of stuff. It's sad. Well, everybody should read and memorize your post.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, to me, it's, we still have not gotten accountability for that. We haven't gotten accountability for what happened in 2016, 2017 either, for that matter, right?
No. And we never will. It's Washington. I mean, if four Americans died in Benghazi because of incompetence and collusion, and there's no accountability. I mean, Trey Gowdy had all those great photo op oversight hearings, and nothing came. Nothing came from it. Four people dead, and they couldn't come up with a reason to prosecute anybody. Even that doofus admiral, former admiral Mike Mullen, that did the accountability review board study. He just took what documents Hillary Clinton's department and chief of staff gave him to study. He never interviewed Hillary Clinton about the night of Benghazi. The president of the United States disappeared for 16 hours, AWOL. You might suspect what he was doing, but he was disappeared from 5 o'clock on the night of Benghazi until the next morning when he vowed swift justice for the deaths of four Americans on his watch, and then jetted off for two fundraisers in Las Vegas. And there's no justice. There's no justice. There's nothing. Swift justice. How many years now? You know, it's such an outrage. And then, of course, we have the open borders, which we're not going to talk about now, but that is a legacy that America will be paying for generations, local taxpayers, the costs of illegal immigrants. I'm, you know, good luck to Donald Trump deporting them. Every one of them, that's great that he can get rid of. It's fine, especially the criminals and all of that. But you're not going to deport 10 or 11 or 12 million people. And so the country will be paying the price forever. The media will not cover it, will not expose it, and there will be no consequences. I mean, I guess there was a story that Trump said he wanted the Justice Department to look into the cover-up and the auto pen and all of that. Yeah. Nothing will happen in Washington. It's a bipartisan deal that they whitewash each other's scandals. And nothing will come of it. No consequences.
Right. Yeah. No consequences. Yeah. You know, and it's the same thing with the Russia collusion thing. I was writing about that today too, about that. And, you know, John Brennan lied to Congress, just like James Clapper lied to Congress about domestic surveillance. Remember that? Nothing ever happened to him. And that was bipartisan. People, Democrats and Republicans wanted his butt in a sling, and nothing ever happened.
And Eric Holder lied to the intelligence judges about James Rosen being a target of interest, so they could get at his phone calls, phone records. He wasn't the target of interest at all. It's a lie. And there will be no consequences. They're all got rich. Now, how did Nancy Pelosi get to be a multi-millionaire on $174,000 a year House salary that got up to $223,000 when she was Speaker?
She kind of did it the old-fashioned way. She married the money, right? I mean,
well, you married the money, and also I'm sure, like Dianne Feinstein, they got heads up on what lots are going to be purchased by the federal government to become post offices or interstate highways or whatever. It's just, and it fuels Donald Trump. But I agree with almost everything Donald Trump is doing. But what if I didn't? You know, what if Donald Trump wasn't doing the right thing and we just got him because we just got somebody like him with evil intent? Just because Americans were fed up, I think they still are, but we're fed up with Washington and the way it works or doesn't work.
Well, and that sort of leads us into your column, right? I mean, now this is actually, I got to tell people, if you haven't read Andrew's VIP column from Sunday, this is what Andrew accomplishes. He talks about the greatness of America and manages to work in the gong show. And still trying to wrap my mind around that one. And I liked the gong show. But I mean, it's a fun column. It's a really good column, but I mean, it's also a pretty pointed column. I mean, that Democrats are—they don't really have anything to offer right now except mindless TDS, right?
Exactly, TDS. They have Trump so inhabits their mind that they can't do anything to save themselves except silly things, holding up signs during speeches, little goofy photo ops. It's impotent, and because they are impotent, because they're consumed by Donald Trump. And even the commenters on my stuff on Facebook, a man that I have been good friends with all this time, and he says he doesn't admit it, but he can't get it that they're fooling themselves. The big lesson that the DNC drew from the election loss, where they lost significant chunks of their base, blacks and Hispanics, the lesson they drew was that we didn't sell the extreme leftist agenda well enough. I have to think that eventually they will come around and realize, maybe they won't say it, but realize what a disaster the last few years was, a corrupt disaster with Biden, his son, the whole crowd, the lies, the collusion with media. You have to hope that they will come around, because democracy needs two competing viable forces. And, you know, 1964, the GOP got shellacked by Lyndon Johnson, and Barry Goldwater was way ahead of his time with conservatism. And then just 2 years later, they came back, and I think they GOP took eight Senate seats. Eight Senate seats and a bunch of House seats. And then, of course, 1968, it was narrow, but in 1968, Nixon won. And that was the first of winning five out of the next six presidential elections until Bill Clinton came along and completely changed Democrat thinking. I mean, they need another Bill
Clinton.
Just 8 years, and he couldn't foist his vice president off on the country. But where he came along with centrist, as a centrist Democrat, I mean, it seems like a cartoon now, like a Roadrunner cartoon, where Clinton got the message that we need to bring the party back to the middle. And succeeded until 94. He learned very quickly that he needed to change course, and he did. And he won handily in 96. Republicans helped him out with a weak ticket, but he won in 96. But they're just so, I have to say, afraid, but they're so angry at Donald Trump. I mean, you look at the collusions, the hoaxes, the lies, all aided by media that have gone on since Donald Trump came, these 10 years now, because they'll do anything, try to ruin his financial status. Trump up felony charges. And none of it worked. Now, I don't know how Trump survived as a human being emotionally. That's a good training, a good sign of he's strong enough to be president. But
he's worth a few billion dollars. It's also sort of a comfort.
I know, but you think about it. You get up every day. You got to go to court. You're being accused. You're being tarnished your reputation. He got his back up and he fought back and all that, but just personally, and we'll never know, we don't need to know, but privately, how do you handle that? Just years and years of coming at you with impeachment, impeaching him for things that that Joe Biden did, the phone calls to Ukraine, and then Biden bragged about it. The whole thing is just so smelly. I used to have to go out. I had a horse when I was little, and I'd go out and take care of him. And I realized later that I really smelled when I went to school from cleaning out the stall every morning. and that's the Democrats now. I don't know how long American voters will keep that in mind, But they should.
They should. And you should keep in mind reading So Much Trump Winning, So Much Dem Losing. That's the VIP column from Andrew at redstate.com. He also has a one of his memory columns up. And this is a lovely one. And those are always in the clear, by the way. Malcolm's memory is a toddler's first fourth. And I don't remember my first fourth. Your memory is better than mine. But I remember a lot of when I was a kid and going over to my uncle's houses and shooting off fireworks. I'm not a fireworks guy anymore. We've only got a minute or two, but I don't want to give away too much. People need to go over there and read that, but it's like all the rest of your memories columns. It's just lovely and really worth reading. So everybody needs to go over there.
Thank you. In fairness, it wasn't my first July 4th. It was my first son's July 4th. He didn't have a clue.
I've been around. I mean, with my granddaughters.
I jacked him up. Yeah. I jacked him up, and then the reality sunk in, and he was disturbed. Anyway, I have one joke this week, Ed.
I've got one for you too. I might have two, but I definitely have one. But go ahead. Let's get yours in first.
All right. So a pastor was giving a children's sermon to the Sunday school, and he asked them why the priests wear specific vestments and, for instance, his collar. And the one child raised his hand and said, well, because it prevents fleas for 30 days.
And ticks.
Yeah. Fleas and ticks for 30 days.
All right. I got one for you here. So one Sunday, young man comes back to his family and says, Mom, Dad, I've got some great news. I'm getting married to the most beautiful girl in town. She lives about a block away. Her name is Susan. Oh, that's wonderful, right? But after dinner, his dad takes him aside and says, look, Joe, I have to tell you this. Your mom and I have been married for 30 years, and she's a wonderful wife, but she never really offered a lot of excitement in the bedroom. So I used to fool around with a lot of women, and Susan is actually your half-sister, so you can't marry her. So Joe's heartbroken, right? Breaks it off with Susan. And, you know, after a few months, he starts dating again. And about a year later, he comes home and says, hey, I've got great news. I've met a new girl, and she's terrific. And her name's Diane. And she said, yes, so we're getting married in June. Oh, that's wonderful. But afterwards, the father takes him aside and says, you know, I got to tell you, but Diane is also your half-sister. So you can't marry her either. And this time, Joe's absolutely furious. So he decides he's going to go to his mom and just, you know, blow the whistle and says, you know, I'm never going to get married, Mom. Every time I fall in love, Dad tells me the girl is his half-sister. And her mother just shook her head and says, look, don't pay any attention to what he says. He's not really your father.
Oh, hell.
Well, at least the sons still believe in marriage. So there you go.
Talk about the swamp, eh? Yeah.
Talk about the swamp. There you go. It's like Washington. All right. Andrew Malcolm, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, at AH Malcolm on Twitter. Always great catching up with you. We're going to do it again next week. And in the meantime, have yourself a lovely week and look forward to your next columns.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, everybody. See you then.